You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mike Vrabel is the first head coach you also faced as a player. What do you remember about him back then?
Yeah, he was a great football player. Smart, athletic. I think he tipped a screen pass of mine once, intercepted it.
I think I remember the interception. How he had 11 of himself. He's an elite company. Like that was a long time ago.
He's a good football player. He's transitioned to obviously a great coach.
Nothing but love between Big Ben and Mike Vrabel. Both their teams undefeated. They're facing off Sunday. And even though it looks a little different these days, we'll be talking about it. Welcome to NFL Live. We're talking that Tennessee-Pittsburgh game, as I mentioned, explaining one thing that changed in the Steelers' offense for the better. Keyshawn Johnson was dancing over there. Dan Orlovsky and Marcus Spears, you saw him. Adam Schefter here, of course. And Week 7 begins tonight between the Giants and the Eagles. Schefty, some good news on the injury front for both of these teams.
Yeah, Laura, a short time ago, the Giants activated Sterling Shepard. They'll warm him up tonight, but I think the sense is he's going to play. DeSean Jackson is back for the Eagles. Lane Johnson is able to go. We know these teams have a lot of injuries, but there are some players who will be back tonight for both teams. Good news for both sides. As for Michael Thomas, he was not present at the open portion of practice today to the media. He tweaked a hamstring during practice yesterday. His ankle still is not right. His status for Sunday's game against Carolina is now very much in question. Sounds like I'll be surprised if he plays. And Yannick Ngakoue, traded once already this year from Jacksonville to Minnesota, now has been traded from Minnesota to Baltimore. Ngakoue gets to go home, gets to go back to the place he wanted to be all along. The Ravens trade a third-round pick in 2021 and a conditional fifth-round pick in 2022, and now Baltimore will pair Yannick Ngakoue, Calais Campbell. It'll look a lot like Jacksonville's defense from the 2017 AFC Championship game, but better, Laura.
Yeah, Adam Schefter with the latest and with us all show long. Ngakoue is set to join one of the league's best defenses in Baltimore. The Ravens rank first in points per game allowed, and they're also tied for second in both takeaways and sacks on the year. Ngakoue joins a front seven anchored by, as Schefty mentioned, his former teammate Calais Campbell, as well as Matthew Judon, Pernell McPhee, and rookie Patrick Queen. So, Marcus, when you think about this move, Yannick Ngakoue joining the Ravens, how big of a move is it in your mind?
I think it's a huge move. Look, the name relatively doesn't make anybody move outside of football other than knowing he's a good player if you've ran across Yannick. But the bottom line is this. They have to face Patrick Mahomes. They have to face these potent AFC offenses if they plan on getting to the Super Bowl. And now you add another guy that you can create a four-man rush with and find the one-on-ones and hopefully win them. Judon, Calais Campbell, obviously they have Pernell McPhee, and now you add Yannick into the mix. You don't have to blitz as much, Wink Martindale. You can rush four guys and keep your guys in coverage. We love Humphreys on the back end and Marcus Peters. And those guys being more comfortable knowing that they'll have some pressure put on the quarterback without having to add a rusher, I think it's going to help this team tremendously if Wink decides that he wants to rush four guys.
Marcus is right there. I think when you look at what they've done in terms of trying to add some rush to it, it also frees up Judon. Judon's been somewhat in witness protection. We haven't had an opportunity to see him play nearly up to his potential, Marcus. I see you laughing in my peripheral. They get a chance to now have him do exactly what he was brought there to do. Get after the quarterback, free up Judon. Now this Baltimore Ravens defense gets back to playing the way that they're accustomed to playing.
Yeah, Dan, you've been on the Steelers in this division all year long and made no mistake about it. So does this move, adding Ngakoue to the Ravens, does that change your mind at all in the division, the dominant team there? I guess not.
Nah, because he doesn't play tight end or guard, and that's where the Ravens are struggling. Listen, like, I get what you guys are saying, but first of all, this is the number one ranked scoring defense in the NFL. Defense was not going to be their issue. Number two, Marcus, I understand where you're coming from with Wink Martindale. But he ain't going to change. Like, those coordinators got 10 seconds to get their calls in. Those guys rely on instincts more often than not. Like, he's not all of a sudden go, you know what, I'm not going to bring pressure as much. And then, like, going to the field, I understand, like, if I'm an offensive coordinator, now I've got to go, okay, how do I want to scheme up or my protection when it comes to Ngakoue and Calais Campbell and Judon and Derek Wolfer Williams? I get all that, but I still doesn't – I look at, like, the good offensive lines in the NFL because it's or the AFC because it's not just KC for me. Tennessee's offensive line and style, scheme-wise, will minimize this. Indianapolis's offensive line is still better. Buffalo's offensive line is still good enough. Kansas City's offensive line is still good enough. And Pittsburgh's offensive line is good enough in their scheme of getting the ball out quick will minimize this. I don't think this move is as big a deal as people are making it.
Okay. In what world are we living in when you add a pass rusher, when you get teams the third down that you don't have to blitz? Look, you saying Wink Martindale won't change, so you basically saying he'll accept getting a 40 burger hung up on him against Kansas City because he'll do the same damn thing. The move is about being able to get more guys to the quarterback and keeping more guys in coverage. If Wink Martindale doesn't know that, Dan, he needs to find something else to do because we've watched the teams have success against Kansas City. And we're talking about Kansas City because we're basing this off the fact that they might have to go through them in order to try to get a Super Bowl. To me, this is huge. Third down, let alone all of the other downs, for you to be able to rush four guys and he can win a one-on-one. He got 5 sacks on the year. He getting to the quarterback.
Quick, Dan.
So you think the number one defense in the NFL that became the number one defense in the NFL because all their pressure package is just going to decide, you know what, because of one new player, we're not going to be a pressure team that made us the best defense in the NFL?
Were they number one in the league against Kansas City? Did that look like the number one D in the league?
Well, there we go. That answers it right there. And let me just say this. There weren't questions about this. The Ravens were all in on winning a Super Bowl, but now you really can't question that. Another reporting note, the Ravens were bringing in Dez Bryant for a workout. That first reported by the NFL Network. Let's stay in the division and get to the Steelers. Big matchup against the Titans this week. And Chase Claypool has had a huge impact on Big Ben's performance this season. They're really starting to get him more involved in recent weeks. And with Claypool on the field, Roethlisberger completing 75% of his pass attempts compared to just 62% when he's off the field. He's also helping the Steelers stretch the field as they're generating nearly 3.5 yards more per pass attempt than when he's on the field. So, Keith, you're a guy that's got a lot of experience being a receiver in the NFL. How has Claypool changed this Steelers offense?
He's changed it big time. He's given them a true number one wide receiver. There's nothing taken away from Juju Smith-Schuster, but Juju goes back into that number two role where he fits perfectly. They missed a big play threat from Antonio Brown. Now they're getting 19 yards plus a reception out of Claypool. That is huge for Ben Roethlisberger. If you think about the history of the Pittsburgh Steelers, they've always had a big time wide receiver that can go the distance. You got that guy now. You certainly have that guy, and it makes Ben comfortable. He knows that he has an X factor in an X receiver. It's huge. I mean, I don't see how he slipped in the draft and got drafted where he got drafted, but when you go to Notre Dame, they don't throw the ball around like that.
Oh, come on. Yeah, there were a lot of good receivers in that draft, too, that factored in. Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Key brings up a great point, and I also think it's like a change of philosophy. This offense reminds me a little bit, like, scheme-wise of the 2018 Rams, where they were going to run a lot of different plays out of really one singular formation, and the formation for them has become bunch. This is something that they've built within their offense. I also think the point of Mina Kimes the other day, like when Mina said that they're using Claypool the same way San Francisco uses Deebo Samuel. He's not just a receiver. He is a how many different ways or times can we get the ball in his hands? And we have to understand this isn't 1995. It's not the triplets anymore, quarterback, receiver, and running back. You better have multiples of 4 or 5 options. They've got now Claypool, Juju, Deontay Johnson, James Washington, Eric Ebron. Those are 5 big-time pass game threats. And Key's right, Claypool sits at the top.
Yeah, Marcus, on the flip side of this thing, the Titans gave up 36 to the Texans in an overtime win last week. Any major concerns about their defense?
Initially, yes, because if you looked at Deshaun passer rating at 138 through 3 touchdowns in that game, and you scratch your head and say, well, this is the same defense a week before that made Josh Allen look like not an MVP candidate. But as I got further into the game, not really a level of concern. They gave up a lot to the tight ends from the Houston Texans, a lot of underneath routes. that gained another 5 to 7 yards after the catch, mm-hmm. which is a big concern, and they got to get people on the ground. J.J. Watt forced a fumble in their territory. That was a score for the Texans as well. So, yeah, Vrabel will tell you, yeah, we got to clean up a lot of things. We got to get guys rallying to the ball. We have to tackle the ball as soon as catches are made. But if you look at that first half, it wasn't an explosion of offense by the Houston Texans. They did a really good job. I think they go back, recalibrate, and this defense will be fine. Because, look, this offense and the way they're playing, the defense has to know that they have a real shot at winning the Super Bowl, or at least getting there or pushing any team in the AFC if they play well.
Yeah, and I realize it was 12 years ago, but Vrabel playing against Big Ben, intercepting him in 08. We talked about that at the top of the show. You got to think that Vrabel knows some of those Big Ben tendencies that he might be able to exploit.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Pre-game HQ is brought to you by Domino's. Order something for everyone with Domino's Mix and Match menu. Order online and track your order.
There's a scene in Philadelphia as we get ready to kick off week 7 with a matchup between the Giants and Eagles. Couple of one-win teams, but both went in striking distance of first place in that NFC East. So let's check in at the Domino's pregame headquarters with Sal Palantonio. Sal, what's the mood around the teams right now?
Hey there, Laura. Well, I can tell you the mood around these two teams is nearly identical. Let's build off the momentum and the energy of last week. Let's get a win. Let's stake a claim to a division that nobody seems to want and is eminently winnable. And Joe Judge told his Giants team, last week's win in Washington was a collective rising. If we take care of business, we can win some games on the road in this division, especially here where no Giants head coach has won since Tom Coughlin and Eli Manning nearly half a decade ago. And Doug Peterson told his team, the bottom line is we take care of ourselves, take care of the football, we can win these divisional games and come out ahead in a very winnable division. And Carson Wentz talked all week to his teammates and to himself about taking care of the football, getting the ball out of his hands quickly, making sure he helps a decimated offensive line by making sure he's not sitting back and patting the ball in the pocket. Laura?
Thanks so much, Sal Pal. Best to do it. Now time for a smart lineup decisions informed by IBM Watson. In need of a quarterback this week, one sneaky option might be on the field tonight. That's Daniel Jones against this Eagles defense. He's projected to finish with 18 points in standard ESPN fantasy leagues, with IBM Watson giving him a 16% chance to finish with as many as 22.7 points. So there you go. Dan, the fantasy metrics really like Daniel Jones tonight, but you have some reservations about the second-year quarterback. What are those?
Yeah, Laura, his biggest thing is he stares down number one in his progression. A lot of young players do that, but that's what I'm going to watch tonight. It's just this commitment that, hey, that guy's number one, it's a good play call, and I'm throwing it no matter what. But you get so committed to throwing that ball because you think it's so good pre-snap, it ends the game in an interception. You know, I was in it with the Rams in 2017 when Sean McVay got Jared Goff their first year together. And Jared and Sean realized, like, listen, when number one is there, Jared is going to play really good. But Sean said, I had to get him to play better when it came to number two or number three in the progression. So what he did in practice was he strategically got the scout team defense together and said, hey, number one on this progression is this guy. Take him away to force Jared Goff to work to number two, work to number three in his progressions. Jared had no idea that Coach McVay was doing this, but it forced him to get better at realizing just because the play looks good pre-snap doesn't mean number one has to get the football, and it got him better at two to three in his progressions. That's something that the Giants need to get working on with Daniel Jones.
Yeah, Daniel Jones, three red zone interceptions this season after throwing for 12 touchdowns, no picks in the red area as a rookie. Let's get to the Browns and Odell Beckham Jr. this week, speaking with the media, making no bones about not being happy with what's going on with the Browns. His own usage in the offense says he doesn't want to be a good guy anymore. Let's take a listen to what Odell Beckham Jr. said on Wednesday.
I'm pissed. And at this point, I really don't care to keep trying to make myself look like a good guy into the world and all that shit, because I am who I am. I got pulled out of the game. The coach said this was the best decision. You know, it's 8 minutes left. And for me, I'd rather take my children like a man.
Key, you know exactly what it's like to be in those shoes, having done it in your own career. What do you make of how Beckham has handled himself this season?
You know, he's handled himself fine this season. I think everybody's looking at that yesterday and saying that he's being selfish because he wants to help his team. If you hear the entire clip for its entirety, you will know that what he said in the end of that thing is he's frustrated. He wants to win. He's tired of losing to good teams. And that's the frustrating part about all this, man. You don't even understand what it's like when you're being constantly picked on by the media because you have some antics that people may not agree with because of the position that you play. When quarterbacks are doing these things, nobody says anything, much like OBJ said. When Tom Brady makes a decision and he's going to scream at his offensive lineman, the first thing people want to holler is, oh, he's very passionate. Oh, what a great leader. What a good teammate. And then they want to hide behind six Super Bowl rings. TB12 didn't have Super Bowl rings when he was yelling and screaming when he had only two. I mean, you just got to understand it is a double standard at times. There's no question about it. Tom Brady's not the only person. OBJ is not the only person that have certain antics on the sidelines. You see it from Aaron Rodgers. You've seen it from myself. You think if people would assume, yeah, the only thing I wanted Marcus Spears was the football. You played with me. You know damn well that wasn't it. It was about winning.
W's.
It was about being a part of the team. It was about the coaches understanding that you brought me here for a damn reason, and that is to help us win, period.
No doubt. Listen, Key, the misconception about those sideline rants always make me laugh, man. When Tom Brady did it to his O-line and then he didn't remember what down it was, I said, I wonder if the O-line went back and hollered at Tom Brady for having that miscue. Listen, the bottom line is this. People have tried to paint OBJ as this. OBJ wants to win football games. That's always been. He wants to not only be a star and help his team win like every other wide receiver that I've ever come in contact with that's been worth anything wanted, but he also is frustrated about not being able to be an integral part of
Absolutely.
Them winning big games. And the double standard is, and Key, we talked about this, the double standard is always going to be there. Like, we're not ever going to break that barrier down in sports. Tom Brady can do that and get a pass because he got six Super Bowls. Jordan can punch Steve Kerr because he won six NBA championships. Whatever superstar or whatever guy that's deemed to be the GOAT in any situation, LeBron getting on Kyrie or getting on any other guys, it is relative to all of that. But I'm with you as far as the media. Don't paint OBJ as a disgruntled teammate. The dude has always wanted to win. That's been his number one objective, and I know that from talking to him personally.
Yeah, and I hear you guys on the fact that this is not about his own personal numbers, but I will point out that he's hauling in just 4.4 receptions per game with the Browns after catching 6.6 per game while with the Giants. How about this as well from Paul Gutierrez, our Raiders reporter, saying confirmed that the Raiders O-line and basically all of them, in addition to Trent Brown, are now being placed on the COVID-19 list, all deemed high-risk contacts. So they're now quarantined for 5 days plus the last day of contact, which was Monday. Adam Schefter has more on this, so we will be discussing.
Gronkowski, he makes the catch. What a great grab by Gronk. Holy Gronkamole.
We can go whenever. I don't need too much to let it spark. Mike in 98. Boy, I'm taking everything to heart.
All right, so that might have been a little teaser there. Toot toot, the Dan wagon. We got to make some room because Dan's got to add somebody else. Who gets to sit next to you on the Dan wagon this week?
The White Tiger himself, Rob Gronkowski. We all heard all offseason, like, is Gronk going to look the same? Can he actually run anymore? Is he going to be able to make any catches? Maybe he's just a blocking tight end now. And all Gronk has done over the past couple weeks is get a little more settled and get his feet under him and look a little bit like the Rob Gronkowski of old. And remember, what did he do great near the end of his time in New England was dominate in the red zone. Gronk, and I mentioned the White Tiger because that's what he was when he did The Masked Singer, which is the show that my kids love. Is he was dominant then. He's starting to dominate for the Bucks. I'm back on the wagon. I'm back on thinking that Rob Gronkowski is going to be a difference maker at tight end for this offense.
Yeah, Dan, to clarify, you are always on the Dan wagon, but glad to know that Gronk has joined. He was also back at practice today. He's dealing with that shoulder issue. He is limited, though. So toot toot for the Dan wagon. And let's continue on with that game, the Raiders taking on the Bucks. And you've got some more information, Adam Schefter, about this Raiders situation with the offensive line.
Laura, all five offensive linemen are being placed on the reserve COVID-19 list because they've been deemed high-risk close contact to Trent Brown, the Raiders' right tackle, who already has been placed on the reserve COVID-19 list. This means that the Raiders' offensive line has to stay away from the facility for 5 days. And assuming that none of them test positive and they continue to test negative, then you'll be able to get those players back by Saturday. Today, the game against the Buccaneers was moved out of the Sunday night slot because of the uncertainty surrounding the offensive line and into Sunday afternoon. That way, if the league does need to move it, it could push it back to another week. But that way, also, the Seahawks and Cardinals will play on Sunday night football this week. We think that the Raiders' offensive line, again, if it gets clearance, if it tests negative, will be allowed to play on Sunday. But right now, the Raiders are going through a week of practice, basically, without an offensive line.
It's crazy to think about. And here's the other thing about it. They've provided that O-line, Derek Carr, to complete an NFL-leading 73% of his passes this year. So Derek Carr is hoping a lot that they can get back in action. Let's continue on with that game and the defense for the Bucs, that whoever's on the O-line will be facing. Plenty of talk about Brady and the Bucs' offense entering the season, but the defense is leading the way. Through week 6, Tampa Bay's defense ranks first in opponent QBR, yards per play, rush yards per game, and pass rush win rate. So Todd Bowles clearly has this unit playing at a whole other level. Marcus, you hear all those numbers, but you look at it with your eyes. How impressive is this Bucs defense for you?
Very impressive, Els. Look, they have playmakers at every level, and they're getting it done. The guys on those levels are making plays. And listen, this is the worst week ever to have your offensive line not be able to be in the building based on what Todd Bowles is doing. You take a look here. This is Jamel Dean. This dude is stepping up. He played big against the Bears as well, had a pick, but took this one to the crib on Aaron Rodgers. Another piece in that secondary. Then you look at Carlton Davis, who I think is ascending to be one of the better corners in the NFL right now. Big physical, getting his hand on that ball, it turning into an interception. You see Todd Bowles, just a little wrinkled, nothing too particular, just to throw Aaron Jones off. He wraps Lavonte David. And then this is what Devin White did at LSU. Blitz in the A-gap, rush, force pressure on the quarterback and then get him to the ground. You're talking about speed, physicality, a team that can play and adjust however you want to play the game. That's what's so good about him. And I didn't even mention Winfield Jr., the safety, rookie safety out there. He's making plays as well, coming down very supportive in the box. This defense is something to be reckoned with, man. They speed, the physicality, and they can rush you without having to compromise their coverage. Todd Bowles is doing a tremendous job.
Yeah, they call defense like offensive play callers do. And Marcus, the word I love that you used was playmaker. Now follow along with me. What I mean that they call defense is like offensive play callers do. Number one, they change what they show you right before the snap. Great offenses will change what they show the defense right before the snap with like a shift, flip of the back, a motion right before the snap. That's what Tampa Bay's defense will do. They'll show you something, then right before the ball is going to get snapped, they give you a different look. The second thing is great offenses will get to the line of scrimmage. And if there's a defense that they think that they can attack, they will audible to a play that they feel that they can go hurt your defense in. Todd Bowles has given their defense the ability to do that as well. When they offense comes to the line of scrimmage, that defense has the ability to audible into a great defensive call. Not out of a bad one, but get into a great attacking defensive call. And then the last thing is, great offenses will give you a bunch of different plays from the same look. Will give you the same formation and run four, five, six different things out of it. Todd Bowles has done that with this defense. They'll line up in the same defense or the same front, people in the same places, and they will run four, five, six different looks out of that same defense. He calls his defense like a really good offensive play caller does. Yes, they've got really good talent, but Marcus, you using the word playmaker is exactly right. He puts his playmakers in an offensive playmaker type of mentality, and that's why they've become so good on defense since he's been there.
And that's what the Raiders will have to deal with. We'll see what happens with their O-line, but certainly, Key, tons of weapons for your guy, John Gruden, and he's drafted some of them, been smart there, also via trade. So when you think about how that's working for him, how is Gruden using these weapons?
I think he's done a tremendous job. I mean, obviously, I've had my history with Coach Gruden, but at the same time, he is a great play caller. He knows how to take advantages of what they Marcus and Dan calls the strength of that Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense. He'll find that duck, and he'll go to shoot it down. That's what he's always been able to do, whether it's with Hunter Renfro, Nelson Aguilar, Jacobs, who's third in receptions on the team. As you start to build, Henry Ruggs, get him going. As you start to build a team on the West Coast offense, one of the first things they like to do is identify a tight end. You go to the history of West Coast offense, they all have had tight ends. Go all the way back to Bill Walsh and the San Francisco 49ers to John Gruden, where we are today and in between. You talk about Waller. That is a big key component for what they do on the offensive side of the ball. Then he goes out and he drafts Jacobs. He gets Henry Ruggs. He finds Renfro. It's just, I don't know what else to say about the way that he's built this football team. I know he was a dinosaur 10 years ago. He got back in the game. And no, it's serious. That's the way we all thought about it. Oh, it's 10 years. He's out of it.
Yeah.
But now look what he's doing. Now look what he's doing. You got to give it to him.
Well, and the other thing I'd point out, guys, we haven't mentioned Derek Carr here, and people question whether or not John Gruden even really liked Derek Carr that much, whether he wants him to be his quarterback. Derek Carr
that's the way Coach
has thrown
–
well, exactly, because he always wants
nothing.
A new quarterback. But Derek Carr has thrown a league-high 7 touchdowns.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Against the Blitz has been really good this year.
Atlanta is running away 28, New England 3.
Gotta believe, boys.
Touchdown, Patriots have won Super Bowl 51.
These shows are heavy with regret.
I know what happened. Yeah, that was hard, and it took me some time to get over, and you never fully get over it, but I also know it didn't kill me.
I ain't perfect, but I do my best.
Gotta believe, Coach.
Love it.
Oh, hell yeah.
Sorry to Falcons fans for showing that, but anyway, that was the last time Kyle Shanahan was on the field against a Bill Belichick-led team. Dan, what is Shanahan's game plan here against the Pats as we'll see a reunion once again?
Yeah, balance and diversity. You know, obviously the focal point of this offense is George Kittle. And we know the Patriot defense is like, we're going to take away your best player. I think Kyle will do a really good job of moving him around, whether it's line him up in the backfield, motion him out, motion him across, stacks and bunches. But I also think they're balanced with people they can get.
We lost Stan, so we'll get back to him. But as we continue with this 49ers-Patriots game, what do you think about Belichick and Jimmy G?
Well, Dan was talking about George Kittle right there. In fact, he is going to take George Kittle away. Yeah. He's going to make Jimmy G find somebody, whether it's Brandon Ayuk from ASU, if I said his name right.
Ayuk
from ASU, Deebo Samuel, or a guy named Kendrick Bourne. You're going to have to find somebody. Because we're not going to allow you to go to your number one weapon. I know you. I traded you. I groomed you. I made you. This is Belichick. This is what he's thinking. And at the end of the day, he's going to make him go to somebody else. And when he pulls that down, pull that ball down, that defense is going to be there to make him pay for it.
Marcus, Cam's coming off his worst game as a Patriot. What do you expect Sunday out of him?
Yeah, last week against Denver, that'll be his worst game of the season. Look, Cam being out obviously was on the COVID list, and being out, I think he was lethargic, slow. Things weren't clicking all well together. Dan talked about his footwork and things you can fix easily in practice, but also self-evaluation. Josh McDaniels being able to kind of learn about Cam in that particular situation, figuring out the things that they had to do to have success. I think you go back to the drawing board, understand that all is not broken, no need to panic like they talked about, and then push forward as far as grooming and growing this offense and Cam continuing to get more and more comfortable with what he's doing. I thought last week was an anomaly. Now, if he has another one, then there's a bit of concern. But as of right now, L Boogie, he is still Cam Damn Newton.
Well, there we go. I'm glad he can still keep his nickname. Our Football Power Index has this one as one of the closest of all Week 7 games, guys, with the Patriots holding the upper hand with a 50.3% chance to win. Of course, Shanahan and Belichick, not the only reunion this weekend. Let's get Adam Schefter back in here. Give us some other guys who'll be facing some former foes.
Well, Laura, let's start with Jimmy Garoppolo going back to Foxborough. First time since the Patriots traded him for a second-round draft pick. Obviously hasn't been healthy in recent weeks, coming off that high ankle sprain, but looked better last week. A lot of short passes, and you know that this game will mean an awful lot to him and to the rest of the team for Jimmy G to go back to play against his former team for the first time. Jimmy Garoppolo back in Foxborough up against Cam Newton. As for another reunion game, Teddy Bridgewater, the former Saints quarterback, now starting for the Carolina Panthers, going up against his former team. And Teddy Bridgewater's played very well so far this season. It'll be a chance to show the Saints what they missed out on by letting him go to Carolina, staying in the division. And the other reunion game that I know Key cares an awful lot about is John Gruden going up against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The game right now scheduled for Sunday afternoon due to the Raiders' offensive line being quarantined, but obviously would carry a lot of meaning to John Gruden to go up against the Buccaneers team that once let him go and fired him.
What do you think, Key?
Well, I think it's going to be a great game. I think John, certainly, much like Adam said, is looking forward to going back. Well, he actually has been living in Tampa prior to going to the Raiders to coach them, so he's very familiar with the area. They know him well, but he's excited to go back and face his old team, the team that he took to the Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl with. It'll be exciting.
Look at this video down there. Shefty, we got Key down there with Gruden on the screen.
There you go, huh?
Those were the good days, right?
Oh, yeah, I know how much you enjoyed that, Key, right?
Absolutely. Look, as I said about the OBJ situation, man, you have fun. You have things on the sidelines that take place. We won a Super Bowl together. We'll never be able to, you know, thank him enough for getting us that Super Bowl. At least I wouldn't.
Yeah, Adam, I think Key's just being too nice today. I don't know what's
going on. No, it's the truth, though. I mean, we have our differences. There's no question about it.
Laura, he's grown up. He's matured.
I know.
He's a much
wiser
kid.
Here you go.
We don't even recognize
you. You're about to have me go off on national TV. Don't start, Adam.
Well, listen, if you want to go off, then go right ahead. Hey, finish off week 7 of the NFL season right here on ESPN as Aaron Donald and the Rams host Nick Foles and the 5-1 Bears at SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. The game kicks off at 8 Eastern on ESPN. Coverage starts with Monday Night Countdown at 6 Eastern. So that's the end of week 7, but how about the beginning? The week 7 starts tonight with the Giants. I'm so confused about what that was, but it was awesome. The Giants and the Eagles. I love our graphics team here. We're going to make some picks for this game tonight. So, Key, who are you taking, Giants or Eagles?
I'm going to take the Eagles. I'm going to take them 31-17. I think Jalen Hurts will explode onto the scene and play quarterback. None of that gadget stuff. Give him about 20 to 25 snaps and let him get underneath the center, and they'll steamroll the Giants.
Marcus.
Oh, I can't wait to hear Dan. I'm taking the Eagles as well. And it's because Carson Wentz should be the best quarterback in the division now that Dak Prescott is out, and he should be able to elevate this team. I know that they're suffering from injuries, won't have Miles Sanders, won't have Zach Ertz, but Carson Wentz has hit some of those moments where we start to have a conversation about him really having the ability to carry this team, getting DeSean Jackson back as well. And look, they play in New York. Daniel Jones is going to throw the ball away a couple of times in this game based on that front seven from Philly. I'm taking the Eagles tonight.
All right, Dan.
Yeah, I'm taking the Eagles, but obviously Keyshawn working in New York City every day has spent way too much time with Max Kellerman. Listen, Jalen Hurts is going to have a part, you know, in the 8 to 10 snaps, but it will be in gadget form. He's not taking 25 snaps at quarterback tonight. The Eagles will win strictly because they got the best player. Carson Wentz will be the best player on the field tonight.
All right, I'm taking the Eagles too. So let's talk more about the NFC East because somebody's got to win this division. Only the 1984 AFC Central had a combined worse win percentage through week six than 2020's NFC East, according to Elias. The Cowboys somehow on top despite having the league's worst turnover differential this season. Then we've got the Eagles, Giants, and Washington still in contention, very much up for grabs. So Marcus, you can almost just like toss it up there and see what sticks, but who wins this division?
It's got to be Philly. Listen, first of all, for Dan's sake, the Philadelphia Eagles need to win this division based on having their starting quarterback, somebody that's competent behind there. I think it's going to take Andy Dalton a while to get comfortable in Dallas, and it may be too late at that point. But Carson Wentz getting some of his guys back. Alshon may come back. You also may have just reinforcements. He'll start to get a simulation of offensive firepower and guys that can help him win games. But more importantly than that, Doug Peterson is there. This defense is arguably the best defense in the NFC East. Nah, not arguably, it is. Just a little bit ahead of the New York Giants. They should win it because Carson Wentz, their starting quarterback is still intact, and he's supposed to be this great QB based on Dan Orlovsky. So
that?
They damn sure better win it, or he is not going to want to hear me talk about the NFC East after this year.
Come
and
on,
Carson
Dan.
Wentz.
Go sleep.
All right. The Eagles are going to win this division. I told you guys the Eagles were going to win this division in August. They have the best quarterback in the division. And guess what? They had the best quarterback in the division in August. Now they're decimated with injuries, but they have the best quarterback. Their head coach is like light years ahead of the other coaches in the division right now. Not mainly because he had the offseason, but they have a better head coach right now. And then they have the better defensive line. Their defensive line can dominate for the rest of the season. Like, absolutely dominate. And they have the best secondary. They have the best corner in Darius Slay. So, yes, I think people need to understand, like, both these teams that we thought would sit at the top of the division in Dallas and Philadelphia are the two most injured teams in the NFL. So I know everyone likes to make fun of the division, but we have to add that context in there. But the Eagles are going to win this division, Marcus, just like I told you they were going to in August, bro.
You say a lot of things, Dan. Sometimes I just can't believe it. The Eagles are not winning the division. And I don't care what you say about Carson Wentz. You told me Josh Allen was an MVP. Let's not even have that conversation. You praise Carson Wentz a lot. He is a pick machine waiting to happen. Don't get fooled by the game against the Ravens and all of a sudden think that this thing is getting ready to turn all the way around. I know the division is weak as a whole. I 100% know. Don't be looking. I can see you, Dan. I see you out the big monitor over there. I'm just going to tell you this. I know. I'm going to tell you this for sure. You all can say the Dallas Cowboys is out of it. They're terrible. Arizona took them to the woodshed. No question about it. Andy Dalton's first start. Give him some opportunity. It's a weak division. You can win this division at 8-8, man. Come on now. Be serious and think about it. I understand you're a homer with the Eagles.
You think the Cowboys are going to be 8-8?
I think they could be 8-8. I do, Lauren. Yeah. I think they could be an 8-8 football
team. I'm a homer
team.
With the Eagles, and you're not a homer with the Cowboys?
No, I'm not. No,
not. You think
absolutely
that defense
not.
Is going to be
I
good enough?
Not,
you think?
I
go, Marcus.
I am not going to do this best quarterback thing with Dan Orlovsky.
No, I'm not going to do
there
it either. But
nothing.
I just had to do that. I had to serious
there
since he wanted to talk about Max Kellerman.
Nothing. Key.
I'm listening. Key. I'm listening.
There is absolutely nothing that tells you Carson Wentz was the best quarterback in this division before Dak Prescott got hurt.
Nothing.
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 Much less season, Marcus?
Zero.
All right, this isn't the argument.
You just said.
Here's the thing. You mean to tell me that you think that defense in Dallas is good enough to win eight games over the next 10 weeks?
All right. Man, I think we're done there.
Whatever, Dan.
I said the Eagles would win it.
All right.
I don't think they're going to win it.
The Eagles are going to win it, according to Dan and Marcus. And Key says the Cowboys will. We've got time for one more thing before we go. Marcus, you get to take this one.
Yo, Ryan Tannehill. Hey, listen, everybody start paying attention. He's going against this vaunted Pittsburgh Steelers defense. If he continues on this trend that he's on, get ready for the MVP talk and him being up there with Russell Wilson as a guy that could be possibly tied for winning the entire thing. Ryan Tannehill balling. Y'all don't sleep. If he do it to the Steelers, it's real.
Yeah, those Steelers is who he is facing this weekend in a great Week 7 matchup. Bud Dupree on the Steelers side of things having a little fun in his press conference today. Take a listen.
Paying no attention to the guy sitting next to you, but why is Cam the weak link on the defensive line?
Damn, you went there, Joe? It's like, hey, Joe. Oh, we got beef, Joe.
Because Cam, because first and foremost, because he's old.
No, my, like, my
that's your answer?
My
might be Buzz last episode today. So.
Yeah, see, that didn't even know I was funny. Hey, thank you guys. It's a blessing to talk to you guys today.
Just wait. To Wednesday? Oh, it's going down.
Aw, Bud Dupree's face when he didn't know that Cam Hayward was there was the funniest thing that I've seen in a long time. He's like, what did this guy just ask? Are you guys didn't think it was as funny as I did.
Be
that's
careful
fine.
Calling.
Whatever. Fine.
You better be careful calling Cam.
Or our delay doesn't allow us to do anything.
It was really funny, okay? Like did, we'll Bud see Dupree. You tomorrow on NFL Live.